Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, the Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, October 2nd, 2014. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page XVII, the first full paragraph that begins, "Hence the two men." Today's readers are Michelle K. on the 12 Steps, Janice M. on the 12 Traditions, and readers of the text include Elaine B., Sally A., and Anita J. The reference number for yesterday, Wednesday, October 1st, is 6924. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Michelle K. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Michelle Kay, compulsive overeater in northern New Jersey. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Michelle K.
Thank you.
I will now ask Janice M. to read the 12 traditions.
Yes, good morning, and thank you, Kathy K. My name is Janice M. I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media or communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Janice M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page XVII, the first full paragraph, beginning with, hence the two men. I will now ask Elaine to read two paragraphs. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. This is Elaine B., recovered in Massachusetts. Hence, the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving in the ward of the Akron City Hospital. Their very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately and became AA member number 3. He never had another drink. This work at Akron continued through the summer of 1935. There were many failures, but there was an occasional heartening success. When the broker returned to New York in the fall of 1935, the first AA group had actually been formed, though no one realized it at the time. A second small group promptly took shape at New York, to be followed in 1937 with the start of a third in Cleveland. Besides these, there were scattered alcoholics who had picked up the basic ideas in Akron or New York, who were trying to form groups in other cities. By late 1937, the number of members having substantial sobriety time had been then behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholic. Oh, it's just really powerful and exciting to read the very foundations and the beginnings of a text, a program that has literally changed my life. I was reflecting on a couple things yesterday that all are encompassed in these paragraphs. One is that 2 years ago at this time, I was in the food. I was out of control.
1 year ago at this time, I was working the steps and diligently and listening to A Vision for You every day and working with a big book guide. And right now I am about 10 days away from the, you know, I'm preparing for the busiest time of the year for me. And I have more peace and serenity than I've ever known. I really, really have had a personality change that's sufficient to bring about recovery. And I'm enjoying a peace and serenity that I did not know in the 9 years that I was in Overeaters Anonymous before that. And I feel that with A Vision for You and other big book studies like it, that a new light is truly entering the dark world of Overeaters Anonymous and of, you know, overeating. It is unfortunate that that does sometimes include the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in many places that don't hear or carry this message. I was talking with a sponsee yesterday, and she was saying, she lives in a remote area and said, you know, do I need a cell phone in order to really work this program? And I said, what this book says, the instructions say, is that if you just have the first 164 pages in your hand, if you just have this book in your hand, that is sufficient if you work it and you continue to work it every day. And you may have to be like the two men who set out to work almost frantically, but step 12 does require that we give away what we've gotten, that we carry this message. And I was also sharing with somebody just yesterday about, you know, it is so wonderful to be able to be face-to-face with people, but what an amazing thing that every single day we can be on the phone, more than 250 strong, cracking open this book, reading the pages, being available to carry this message to those who are still suffering from compulsive overeating, those who have still not found the way out, even though they may have been in the rooms of OA in the past or currently. And it really is just an amazing, life-changing experience. And I'm so very grateful for the heartening success that I've enjoyed. And I will say that I've worked with a number of people that it didn't work out. And but doing so, I remain sober, just like Bill W. And so here I am today continuing with this work and so grateful to be trudging this road of happy destiny with all of you. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much for your service, Kathy.
Hi, my name is Charles Nashville.
Just a minute, Charles. I just want to thank Elaine, and now we'll open it up to shares. And Charles, please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your service, and thank you for all the visionaries. Good morning, visionaries. My name is Charles. I eat too much to recover compulsive overeater. I just wanted to hop on here. Hence, the two men set to work almost frantically. You know, that work, right? That word work is very encouraging. You know, if I put this work in, right, if I put the work in, I can expect results. And you know, thank God that I had a sponsor that nudged me to, you know, once we went through this 12 steps, and we also went through the 12 traditions, and we went through the big book with a comb, set out and go work frantically. You know, and these numbers are encouragement. Since summer of 1935, you know, the first group started, then another group started, you know, and this is new light, because I could, you know, this is new light that entered into my dark world, and it is my opportunity to take it to someone else. You know, my counselor had said, I talked to him, I had three guys already, and another guy, you know, was telling me, we fellowshipped after a big book face-to-face meeting. And he was like, you know, well, my sponsor's not taking me through the steps, and, you know, would you help me out? And, you know, in my mind, I was like, man, I got three already. But, you know, when I cracked open this part, sometimes I like to go back to the beginning of the big book again on my own. And it says, hence, you know, the two men set off to work frantically. And, you know, at that point, I said, all right, you know, I'll take you on. I'll take you on because this is helping me more than it's helping you. But if it's helping you a little bit, it's all good. So, yeah, the number of members having substantial sobriety time behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light had entered. Like, no matter what, even if you're not a failure, if you continue to try. You know, yeah, I know the stats and I know the numbers and the percentages. The disease want to tell us that we cannot succeed. But if you continue to try, you will get recovery. If you utilize the big book, first 164 pages, actually before the first 164 pages, that which where we at right now, if we touch on this stuff and put it in our hearts and follow it, we will recover. We will. Put that work in. You know, that's what it's telling me. You know, so these numbers are encouraging. It started in New York. It started with two men. Then the first step. You know, some people get it instantly. And some people it take a period of time, whatever it takes. You're not a failure if you continue to try. So with that, I'm going to pass. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Charles. Who else would like to share on these paragraphs?
Sally.
Monica.
Monica.
Okay, I heard Sally, Monica, and Larry. Anybody else? Okay, Sally, please go ahead.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for your service. It's Sally A. in South Jersey, recovered compulsive overeater. I just want to share in the beginning of this paragraph, hence the two men set to work almost frantically upon alcoholics arriving in the ward of the Akron City Hospital. Their very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately and became AA number 3. He never had another drink. And first of all, this word frantically, they set forth frantically. The word frantic means highly excited with strong emotion, frenzied, desperate. And then I would like to draw your attention to page 188. We get a behind-the-scenes picture of what's going on with Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Down in about the middle of the page, it says Bill W., 19 years ago last summer, Dr. Bob and I saw him, Bill Dodson, the same man that we're looking at here on XVII. We saw him, Bill Dodson, for the first time. Bill lay on his hospital bed and looked at us in wonder. 2 days before this, Dr. Bob had said to me, if you and I are going to stay sober, we had better get busy. There it is. There's that frantic. We got to get going. Let's go. Straightway, Bob called Akron City's hospital and asked for the nurse on the receiving ward. He explained that he and a man from New York had a cure for alcoholism. Did she have any alcoholic customers on whom it could be tried? Knowing Bob of old, she jokingly replied, well, doctor, I suppose you've already tried it yourself. Yes, she did have a customer, a dandy. Now here she's referring to Bill Dodson. A dandy. He had just arrived in DTs, had blacked the eyes of two nurses, and now they had him strapped down tight. Would this one do? After prescribing medicine, Dr. Bob ordered, put him in bed. Put him in a private room. We'll be down as soon as he clears up. And then I want to draw your attention to Bill Dodson's perspective, because this is the behind the scenes on Bill Dodson's perspective. On page 184, it tells us, at the very bottom of the page, I was moved into another room. This is as a result of Dr. Bob. Bottom paragraph, 184, I was moved into another room that morning, and there was my wife. And he goes on to talk about how his wife is telling him that you're going to quit. That's what she tells him on page 185. You are going to quit. And she goes on to tell him these two drunks she had been talking to had a plan whereby they thought they could quit drinking. And part of that plan was that they tell it to another drunk. This was going to help them stay sober. All the other people who had talked to me wanted to help me, and my pride prevented me from listening to them and caused only resentment on my part. But I felt as if I would be a real stinker if I did not listen to a couple of fellows for a short time, if that would cure them. And finally, the last thing I want to say about Bill Dodson's story, and I recommend Bill Dodson's story back here in the stories. It starts on page 182. Just want to read the last sentence or the next to last sentence of what he says in his story, Bill Dodson's words, "I came into AA solely for the purpose of sobriety, but it had been through AA that I have found God." Thanks for letting me share with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally A. And Monica, please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. And I too was just going to give you a little bit of history, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater, a little history here on Bill D., which was already just covered very nicely. And the only thing I'm going to add to that is that Bill D. had been in a hospital 8 times before this. 8 times he'd been in, and they had cleared his brain. And on the way out, sometimes within the hour, he was drunk again. But here's just to say, to show the power of one compulsive overeater talking to another compulsive overeater, or two compulsive overeaters talking to another compulsive overeater. What hope here? And like was all also, you know, don't give up hope. Our path is our path. Some get it much quicker than others. Some it takes a long time. But if you're willing and you keep working at it, you know, there's light there. There's light at the end of the tunnel. And it's so nice, a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholics. Because, you know, before this, the world of an alcoholic was extremely dark. Because before this, there wasn't anything. Before this, an alcoholic's fate was a real alcoholic. He would either end up in jail, an insane asylum, or dead. So what hope, what light here we're bringing into this dark, dark place. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Monica. And Larry, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kathy, for your service. Larry, recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. So, yeah, I'll just hit on, you know, a new light has entered the dark world of the alcoholic. You know, so too today, this very morning for us, a new light has entered the dark world of the compulsive overeater. You know, these men were utterly hopeless. They were basically waiting to die in their misery. And just as they were struggling in this vast ocean, you know, drowning with no boat in sight, no lifeboat in sight, you know, out of the corner of their eye, they see a life preserver floating towards them. You know, it's like a glimmer of hope. Can you imagine the rush of adrenaline they experience as they reach for this life preserver? You know, they were hopeless. I was hopeless. You may feel hopeless. Resigned to their death sentence. And, you know, by some miracle beyond their understanding, it was beyond my understanding, they're saved. You know, so we go from mental and physical and perhaps spiritual exhaustion to exhilaration and peace. And now, supported by that life preserver, you know, we grab onto that life preserver. In the distance, you know, we see a rescue ship. It's, you know, it's making its way towards us. And this is the fellowship, and this is the practical program of action. And, you know, do we begin to swim towards that ship? You know, or do we swim away from it? And you see, when one is drowning, we don't analyze the process of being saved. And nor do we debate the likelihood of its success. If we're drowning, we certainly don't push away the life preserver. We start swimming towards the ship, because to do otherwise would be insane. And the beauty of this program is that no matter how long you've been drowning in the sea of life, no matter, you know, how many times I've kicked that life preserver away, I have the opportunity to grab a hold of it today. And then, you know, the beauty, you know, when we read, we say, faced with alcoholic destruction, as soon as we become as open-minded on spiritual matters as we've tried to be on other questions, in this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. That's what happened to me. I had to be brought to my knees, bloodied. Like, I love Leah when she talks about tombstones in my eyes. Yeah, that about describes it for me. You know, but otherwise, I'll sit passively back. And I'll watch all the other people become recovered. Nothing will change. If nothing changes, nothing changes. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Who else would like to share in these paragraphs?
This is
Mary.
Janice M.
Okay, I heard Mary and Kim. Was there someone else?
Janice.
Anybody else?
I'd like to share. This is Vasa after Kim, please.
Okay, Vasa. So I have Mary, Kim, Janice, and Vasa. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes.
Mary, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Mary T. in Vermont, recovering compulsive overeater. I just wanted to share briefly on the meetings that were springing up without even people realizing it. And in my little corner of the world in Vermont, the meetings are quite small and spread out. And I've been going to these meetings for over 10 years now. And it started with, for me, it started one person saying, hey, I've got this phone number of this meeting. And years of feeling desperate, you know, going to the meetings, reading the literature, and still being terrified and having no solution, I found the solution. And now others are finding the solution, too, with this book. And recently, our meetings have changed a little bit, and now there's newcomers coming in, and they're hearing, I'm looking at these people who are hearing the solutions the very first meeting they attended. And it's just such a blessing. And we had a group conference the other day, you know, really to say, hey, it looks like all of us are really working the big book now. Maybe we should change our format. And it's just, you know, a wonderful thing to see that our meeting is changing and these meetings around here are changing and people can come in here and hear the solution and know how to get out of that desperate, dark place of compulsive overeating. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And Kim, please go ahead. Press star one to unmute, Kim. Okay, let's move on to Janice M., and then we'll come back to Kim. Go ahead, Janice.
Thank you again, Kathy, for your service. Janice M., recovered compulsive overeater. Very grateful. You know, I'm going to, historically, we have the history. Now, we have to remember, this was done in 1937. This is before the book was written now. So, you know, how did this happen? Well, first of all, Bill and Bob was as desperate as a sponsor, you know, as a carrying the message as Bill Dobson was to get recovered. I mean, they're both desperate. They're both working frantically, which I think is something because each one of them never had another drink afterwards. And remember, in 1937, they didn't have cars and airplanes and roads and no book. So how did this message get across? Well, it got across by the men being recovered and telling their story of their experience, strength, and hope. Because what comes from the heart, right, reaches the heart. That's why it's called the language of the heart. That's the only way that it grew into three groups. Imagine traveling New York, Cleveland, Akron, Ohio. And that to me is really something because they had the tenacity, you had the desire, the persistence to help somebody else and get well. And you know, my own experience, I mean, it gives me the chills when I read this because you know, somebody took me through the steps. And then I helped somebody else as a guide. And that person today, one of them, is not through no success of mine, it opened up a big book, started a big book study in her state. I mean, just like this is happening, the same thing is happening today. If we just share our experience, strength, and hope once we get the results. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice. And Kim, are you here? Press star one, Kim. Okay, Vasa, you're next. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Kath, and good morning, everybody out there. And thank you for your service. And I'm Vasa, and I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. And I was really relieved to find out that there was a solution for my problem. I've been trying to fix the problem for years and years in my life, off and on, without any success. And when I heard the solution was there, the instructions were there, if we just followed them. And I also learned that half measures availed us nothing. You know, I can't only put a little bit. If I put only a little bit, I get only a little bit. And faith alone without the works does not work. And I did surrender with the food, you know. And, but, you know, that was not the end. I had to continue going through, you know, go to meetings. In my days, I used to travel everywhere because I was so desperate, you know. I wanted to hear what the food was, what addictions were, and because I was suffering, I wanted to have a relief from it. And then once I got my abstinence, it was by, you know, it's with God's help and the fellows in the program that encouraged me to keep coming and gave me the support. And my sponsor said, well, now you got to give it away. And I felt like I had nothing to give it away. Well, she said, you know, how are you keeping abstinent? And I said, well, God is helping me. And people, you know, and I hear what people are doing. You know, they get into the steps and they work the steps. They go to the traditions and, you know, and I gradually started, you know, practicing what my sponsor was doing and what other people were doing. But it is a miracle. You know, I struggled with this food addiction for so long, so many years, and to find the solution was just so miracle. I'm getting a phone call. So I'm just going to be right back. Thank you very much for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa. Would anyone else like to share on these two paragraphs before we move on?
Penny C. here.
Okay, go ahead, Penny.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Kathy. Thank you, everybody that's on the line here. I'm reading this one sentence that their first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. And then it goes on to say he never had another drink. Because this is just a forward to the second edition and does not allow great detail, the thing that sounds to me so simplified again here is, how do you like that? He recovered immediately and never had another drink. And it would seem that that's the definition of recovered, if he never had another drink. But we know, and I know, that recovery, especially for me personally in my experience as a compulsive overeater, recovery is not just abstinence. Like for Bill D., it wasn't just sobriety. Recovery includes a spiritual recovery. And as I was glad to hear someone else go to the story of Bill D., and it says here, this is Bill D. speaking, it was in the next 2 or 3 days that I had my, after I had my first met Doc and Bill, that I finally came to a decision to turn my will over to God and to go along with this program. And so the important thing for me is to realize again that this is a spiritual disease and requires a spiritual solution. So recovery, just to emphasize for myself and maybe others, that the fact that he recovered doesn't just mean that he stopped drinking. It means, and it goes on later in his story to say, he decided he would turn his life and his will over to the care of God. So that's really, really what recovery is, that I've had a spiritual awakening, and because of that, I'm able to cease my compulsive overeating one day at a time. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Penny C. Let's move on.
Donna.
Oh, who's that?
Donna.
Okay, Donna, you'll be our last share before we move on. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I just came on. Thank you for your service. I'm Donna, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I was just wondering where you're at in the big book.
Okay, we are on page XVII, and we are going to read now the last full paragraph on the page. We just read the two paragraphs prior to that. And I'm going to ask Sally to read that paragraph for us, please.
Sure. It's Sally, still Sally, recovered in South Jersey. It was now time the struggling groups thought to place their message and unique experience before the world. This determination bore fruit in the spring of 1939 by the publication of this volume. The membership had then reached about 100 men and women. The fledgling society, which had been nameless, now began to be called Alcoholics Anonymous. From the title of its own book, the flying blind period ended, and AA entered a new phase of its pioneering time. I think that if you take a look at page 19, in the little bit lower than the middle of the page, the third paragraph down, it tells us, we have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. We shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. And I am going to dip into that next paragraph, just that one top line, the bottom line of just the page XVII, it says, with the appearance of the new book, a great deal began to happen. And I have to say, this is a very important sentence in my life, because I've been going to OA for 29 years. I had been following a checklist of 3 meetings a week, check, 3 meals a day, check, write your food down, call it into your sponsor, check, 3 phone calls a day, check. And I honestly thought that somehow by osmosis, something was going to change, and I was going to eventually, somehow, I was going to experience the promises on page 83 and 84. And lo and behold, it wasn't working. And even in OA, I was gaining weight on a regular basis. I was binging. I was outdoing whatever weeks of abstinence I had. And, you know, I was struggling, because I would lose a pound, I would be abstinent for a month, 2 months, and then I'd binge and gain 10 pounds. Then I'd get back on the wagon and I'd lose a pound, maybe 2 pounds, then I'd binge and gain 7 pounds. And that was my experience for the last 10, 11 years in OA, until I found out about the big book study groups. And I have to tell you that with the appearance of this book, thank God for this book, a great deal began to happen in my life, beginning with an 85-pound weight loss, no more off and on and off and on wagon. And it has truly changed my life drastically, not only this telephone line, but reading this book and understanding the problem, the solution, and the plan of action. Thanks for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
This is Bella. Can I share?
Yes, Bella.
Leah.
1 minute. Anybody else want to share?
Leah.
Anyone else? Okay. Go ahead, Bella, please.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Bella, and I am a thankful recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Katie, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody on the line. To place their message and unique experience before the world. Yes, this is exactly me. Before the program, I was very much self-centered and very much selfish. I was self-centered. I was thinking only about me. I was thinking about my ego. And if my ego wasn't satisfied, then when I got into anger, blaming, judging. I was very much self-centered, and I didn't want to be, well, it's not that I didn't want, I didn't know how to social. And now, thank you God, that I am in the program. I learned that the program is all about we. We are here all together and still unique experience. I am unique with my experience, and as well, you are unique with your own experience. And this is the beauty of the program, that we are all unique in our own unique way. And from we all have the opportunity to learn new things, to learn new behaviors, and to get new beliefs. And my first belief now that I gain being in the program, that I am connected to the higher power. I am connected 24/7 to a power of acceptance and love. And yes, I am human, and I don't know everything all the time. I am here to learn from your experience. And I am here also to share my experience, because we all share our experience, strength, and hope. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Bella. And Leah, please go ahead.
Thank you for your service, Kathy. It was now time, the struggling groups thought, to place their message and unique experience before the world. Yes, you know, these men and women, you know, had a unique message. You know, that message was that they had had a personality change, a spiritual awakening that had been sufficient to bring about recovery from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that they had been, you know, living in. And they had been groping their way along, you know, with this new idea, this road of freedom, and they decided upon a book which they could tell other alcoholics this great news. And, you know, this book took form. It was inscribed in it was the essence of their experience. It was the product of thousands of hours of discussion, and it represented that collective voice that they had, that collective heart and conscience of those who had been pioneering these first 4 years. The book came out, obviously, in 1939, so those first 4 years of AA, these men and a woman, you know, blazed this trail. And, you know, this was a message that had depth and weight. You know, that paragraph before, it said, the number of members having substantial sobriety time behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholic, and that's exactly what was happening here. I mean, we have to remember, it's hard to realize today, but, you know, back then, alcoholism was still a hush-hush word, not to be uttered above a whisper. It was taboo to most people, and unknown is a word to even more, and the press was afraid of it, and afraid of the public's reaction to such an unpleasant subject. But they could not argue. This program of recovery didn't need to stand on trial, because the reality, the bottom line, is that their human resources, as marshaled by the will, was not sufficient. They had failed utterly. These men and women were being had afraid of day. And finally, you know, something was happening here. This was about the raising of the dead. I mean, how do you explain people who were totally enslaved by alcoholism, who were now rising up out of a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body? That was not a common experience. But you know what? It was their experience. It was their experience. They had had a spiritual awakening. They had been restored to sanity. They had soundness of mind. They were relieved of the obsession, freed from the beast of alcoholism. And now they had a message to carry. And it was a very specific and unique message indeed. And that same spiritual chain reaction that grew from Ebby and Bill to Dr. Bob in Akron, and then Dr. Bob and Bill to Bill D, et cetera, you know, was now going to start to stretch to countless alcoholics and leads us to today. You know, leads us to Thursday, October 2nd, 2014, on a phone line with a bunch of compulsive overeaters who I'm sure you have better things to do. But, you know, we're here to carry a message that the same program of recovery that came out on these pages in 1939 has never needed to be changed. In fact, it's been left untouched. The first 164 pages have been left untouched. Why is that? It's because nobody's been able to improve upon the program of recovery. These same steps that came out on the press in 1939 are the same ones that restore us to sanity today. So you can't argue with what works. These are the results. These men and women were living proof of a power greater than themselves restoring them to sanity. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leia. Who else would like to share on this paragraph? Well, I'm going to take a turn. This is Kathy, a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm really struck by the fact that I carried the big book around with me for a number of years while attending OA meetings and finding it to be almost like it was written in a foreign language. I couldn't really relate to the material. So when I hear the fact that this book was published, I recognize what a critical turning point that was for the fellowship and the society. And also behind that was the infrastructure of these founders helping to take people through the steps as they're outlined in the big book. And until I had a big book sponsor, I would occasionally read paragraphs. I can remember I had one sponsor who suggested I read one page of the big book every night before I went to bed. And I did it dutifully, but I never really internalized the message, the action steps that were implied so clearly now that I've been through it a few times. So I'd just like to say that it's also the willingness of the recovered people to actually work one-to-one with suffering alcoholics and compulsive overeaters that brings this book alive. And we are so fortunate that we have a vision for you today to help us with that process. And for me, it's still a big part of my recovery to read with newcomers and with sponsees that I'm working with to help bring alive the words as they're laid out here in the big book. It continues to support my own working of the steps. And with that, I pass. Would anyone else like to share on this paragraph?
Rochelle and then Hannah.
Thank you. Go ahead, Rochelle.
Good morning. This is Rochelle, recovered food addict in Baltimore. I would just like to say thank you so much to the people who started this meeting, to everyone who does service on this meeting, to everyone who listens to this meeting. I have been recovering now. This is my seventh year. This time of year is my seventh year of back-to-back abstinence. It's also my seventh year of being in OA. I also have a food history before that, where I was not successful doing this with my own ego. And I was blessed with being able to become abstinent right away. But although my sponsor said to me, read the first 160-plus pages of the book, which I did, I saw it as no different than weighing my meals three times a day and making three outreach calls three times a day and going to meetings three times a week and doing whatever I had to do. It had to be an equal part of what I was doing. And perhaps that was a mistake because all I did was I read it as fast as I could. I can't say that it sank in. I can't say that I absorbed it. I can't say that I practiced it. I did what I was told to do, but but it wasn't given the importance that it has achieved in my life since then. So it's only been because a friend of mine who is in recovery here in Baltimore, she said to me, Rochelle, there's this meeting on the line at 7 o'clock in the morning. I think you would like it, you know, and I called in, and I have been an aficionado ever since, and it really is so amazing to me how this analysis, paragraph by paragraph, and the sharing and the history and everything coming out from other members who are in recovery really makes a big difference, because now it's not just, well, read, I said it was Bonsi, well, read the 160-some-odd pages and make sure you weigh and you measure your food and see the meetings, blah, 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 make fuck about. No, it's not that. It's we do gratitudes and we check our food program, and then we go on to make sure we include some reading that she did in the big book. We go over it, we discuss it, and it's an integral part of the program of recovery. So it's like 50% of what I do with any sponsee, and I hope that results in recovery. It certainly helps me. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rochelle. And Hannah, please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. I'm Hannah. I'm a recovered compulsive eater in Colorado, and thank you, everyone, for your service. For the people who are listening and the people who are sharing, what I'm really struck by in this reading of both the foreword to the first edition and now the foreword to the second edition is that they are following the traditions in this writing. You know, they're leaving out outside issues, which is the 10th tradition. They're staying focused on a message of recovery, which is the 5th tradition. And they're helping others in the 12th tradition. They're staying anonymous. It's striking to think about the times when this was written, the first 164 pages. The second edition was written when the traditions were already in the form that we have them now. But the first 164 pages that were written don't talk about what was going on politically at the time or in the world at the time. And it was a time of such great upheaval. And it took, I think it took enormous courage, not just to talk about, to write about alcoholism, but to write about having a spiritual awakening, having a psychic change, having a personality change. I think that it's just extraordinary, and it amazes me that they could do this, that they understood how to do it even before the traditions were formulated. So I'm thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Hannah. And would anyone else like to share on this paragraph? We have just a few more minutes, and
Suji,
go ahead, please.
Hi, Kathy. Thanks for sharing, and thanks for listening and sharing to others. Well, I just looked at this. The flying blind period ended, and AA entered a new phase of its pioneering time. So they took the book, they spread the book around, and then they named the society after the book. How interesting. You would have thought it'd be the other way around, but the society named after the book. So a great thing started. Well, I had a horrible experience yesterday, which relates to this great experience. The horrible experience was that my husband seems to have a diagnosis of some type of lymphoma. And oh my, cancer. He could die. Well, he is 70, and I'm 68, so we're into that channel, we know that. But this was bad news, and I was very upset. So here we are in our family, and just to say what recovered means, oh my God. So he and I decide we've got to tell our three grown daughters, who are very nice people. They're grown-ups now, and they're nice grown-ups. And so the phone rings before we get to call anybody, and it's our youngest daughter, who's not one of the addicts. And she's the one we had the usual way. And so my husband tells her that he's just had this MRI, and they're engaged in this conversation, talk, 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 and I'm listening. And then he says, oh, excuse me, but Mom's sitting there. She broke a pencil. He's right. I broke a pen. I was mad, and I broke that pen. And then their conversation continues. Then he says, would you like to talk to Mom? And Rachel says, yes. And so I pick up the phone. Hi, dear. I'm really sorry we have this bad news. And what does she do? She sobs. She's crying and sobbing. And what does that do for me? It's healing. It's so healing because she's crying because she loves her father. And she can cry to me, her mother. We're open in our communication. It's right there on the surface. And I said to her something I learned when I was 15 and my father had his first heart attack. And I said, it feels terrible when a parent is sick or when dot, 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 this isn't happening today, but if a parent is dying, it feels terrible. It feels like the bottom of your world has dropped out. I said, don't isolate with it. Don't keep it to yourself. Share it with others. People in the world are ready to hear this stuff now. We don't have to keep it a secret. That's what I learned in this fellowship and in my other 12-step fellowship. Don't keep it to yourself. If you live in the problem, you'll make the problem bigger. If you live in the solution gets bigger. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Sue. Okay, we will now close the meeting. Thank you, everyone who has shared. I'd like to ask Anita J. to read A Vision for You on page 164, and then we'll say the Serenity Prayer together. Anita J., please press star 1 to unmute. Okay, I'm wondering if Elaine or Sally could read that for us.
Did you ask for me, Elaine B.?
That would be great if you could do it, Elaine.
Sure. Thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.